Welcome to the Edge Shift podcast with Katie Novak.
Really around this idea of like research and strategies and people doing interesting things.
And Chris Astle.
Doing what's best for kids, like putting kids at the center.
Our goal at Edge Shift is to dive into educational trends and practices and to connect you with educators and innovators around the world who are committed in subtle and in grand ways to shifting the fabric of education. Check out the show notes for ways to connect with us and our guests.
Hello, everyone. Really excited for this episode of Edge Shift. I think I say that every time, but that's because it's true every time. Today, I am excited to be joined by Dr. Sam Fesich. She is a professor, an author, a content creator, someone I've had the pleasure of working with for a little while now, and really excited to have her here on Edge Shift. Dr. Sam, welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Katie and Chris. I'm excited to be on. Let's get the party started.
Let's. For our audience members who aren't following you yet or aren't familiar with your work yet, give a little bit of an intro, kind of, you know, about all that you do and what you're focused on.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I'm a professor of education at a small liberal arts school in Pennsylvania, where I work with future teachers on issues related to educational technology and special education. And then I'm also the author of several books for new and future teachers, and also a podcast host, because, you know, why not? Because it's a lot of fun. You get to learn new things, and I selfishly get to learn from a lot of amazing people. And I think I do the same intro. I'm so excited to be here today, because it really is true, right? You get to learn and grow, and that's one of the great parts of being a teacher. You're a lifelong learner. So, yeah, author, professor, podcast host, love pumpkin spice latte. That's me in a nutshell.
Love it. Love that encapsulation. Awesome. So in terms of the work that you do with new teachers, what are you seeing right now in the way that people are thinking about and approaching technology, particularly for teachers in training, for new teachers? How is that playing out and evolving in this sort of post-COVID-y world that we're in?
Yeah. Are we post-COVID yet? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Post the intense part, I guess. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. So I think students coming into education and specifically looking at educational technology, I think they're coming from two areas. One would be, oh my gosh, my experience online learning was amazing. I was interacting, I was engaging. I really enjoyed my online learning experience. And then we have the other group of students like, it was not great. It's not my thing. I do not like technology. So we kind of have two groups of students coming into education. And I think when we think about educational technology as a whole, even before COVID, it needs to be implemented in meaningful ways. Not just something like, oh, there's 5 minutes left in class, go play an iPad app, la, 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 they were done. No, it needs to be purposefully planned, and it needs to show some sort of meaningful way to engage students or collect data. Technology is amazing. I always say technology is great when it works, right? It needs to functionally work in our classroom spaces, but it also needs to work with our teaching, our pedagogy, our data collection, our progress monitoring, all those little non-instructional tasks that we do with our students, like collecting forms and collecting attendance and lunch count, those types of things. So technology can really save us a lot of time, but we have to be able to use it purposefully in our classroom, not just as an add-on thing, or I'm getting observed, I guess I should do something in my classroom with technology. So really coming at it at that mindset of, here are lots of different tools that we can use. Not everyone is going to jam with your teaching style and your teaching strategy, and that's okay, but know that they're out there because we have lots of variety of students in our classes, and using some of these tools can support them in their learning, whether it's differentiating how we present our content, or how we're getting our students to respond to our content, having them show what they know in a different way.
So as a follow-up to that, I think it's such a great point in the purposeful use of technology. And when I think of teachers, new teachers entering into the workforce, and even teachers who've been there a while, technology is evolving so quickly and it changes all the time. And it sometimes feels hard to be prepared, or maybe you don't understand or you aren't familiar with the technology that's implemented in the district you moved into, or maybe a new initiative comes in. How do you coach developing teachers to respond to that and to be prepared for that?
That is a great question. So, for example, in my course, we have a section where we talk about formative assessment tools. And we do things like the Kahoots and the GimKits and the BlueKits, but all the types of skills that we're using, how to develop questions, how to make sure we check the correct answer is correct on whatever tool that we're using. Those skills are transferable no matter what tool that we use. So teaching those transferable skills and then giving students autonomy over which one they want to use. Like, are you comfortable using BlueKit? Are you comfortable using GimKit? Here's a variety. Here's how they look at it from the teacher perspective. Let's try them out from the student perspective. Now you go and create something. But those skills that we teach are transferable across those different tools. So reminding them, hey, you've done this before. You can do it again. Let's just do it one step at a time. So I think it's easy to get overwhelmed with, oh my gosh, technology is changing all the time. I don't know what's going to be whenever I'm a student teacher, whenever I'm a first year teacher, but you already have those embedded skills done. So just take it one step at a time. It'll be okay. Reminding them that they have the background knowledge.
Do you feel like there is a need to also teach teachers how to research ed tech tools, how to stay familiar with ed tech tools? Like, how do you help them keep current as things evolve so that they can identify the best tool for the group of students that's in front of them and the learning task they have at hand?
For sure, Chris. Yeah, that's a really important part too. We talked earlier about being lifelong learners, and as teachers, we get to keep learning and growing. A great way to do that is being a connected educator. So using tools like Instagram to connect with other educators from across the country, around the globe, see what they're using in their classrooms. I know Facebook's kind of old, but Facebook groups do exist and they do have great resources. I know, right? Pinterest, another great resource, not just for recipes or dorm room decorations. They have fantastic resources for educators too, to support their learning and growing. And then of course, using traditional tools like LinkedIn, that's more of a professional persona that you're presenting there, but you could definitely share your resources and get a few pieces of content there as well. So I think being open to connecting to other teachers and finding out what they're using and how they're using it in their classroom, not just what is it, but how are they using it? How are students responding to the tool? How are they reacting to it? Did they enjoy it? Is there something that I could use differently that could get me to my objective better? So always being reflective in their practice.
I love how you're talking about those transferable skills as well, in terms of, like, you know, it's the same thing we talk about with kids in the classroom, right? And that idea of being fluent with technology is important at whatever age you're at and whatever world you're entering. How do you approach, supporting new teachers with having the right mindset about things that are emerging in terms of, oh, say ChatGPT, for instance? Mm-hmm. I guess at what point is it like, yeah, I guess we should figure out what this means for education? What's your thought process around those types of things?
Yeah, so at the beginning, whenever you're talking about like having a mindset towards trying new things, I was thinking having that growth mindset. So sometimes students come into the class and they're like, I'm not good with technology, or I'm not very tech savvy. Maybe they've had bad experiences using technology. So trying to encourage them to try new things, have an open mind, and having them have quick wins with technology is really important. So one of the tools that we start off with for a quick win is Canva, because you can't lose with Canva. Whether you're making a flyer or a banner for your Google Classroom, you're going to have a quick win. You can download it. Oh, look how great I am. Woo-hoo. So starting off with some quick wins, increasing that confidence in technology, and in just encouraging them to try new things. You never know what kind of student you're going to have in the classroom. So being aware of these tools is really helpful. Now, when it comes to, all right, there's something new on the horizon, ChatGPT. Let's see what we can do about it with education. I know I see lots of posts like 10 things you can do with ChatGPT to save you teacher time. I think I wrote one of those. I mean, thinking about like, yeah, there's some great resources out there. We also have to be mindful, how is that affecting our students' education? How is it affecting our pedagogy? And then also thinking about the data and the privacy behind some of those new tools as well. So although I'm very new to ChatGPT, I've used it for some different like email templates, some feedback, like make this feedback sound better. And I'll put it like what I have, and it does make it sound better. And then I'll tweak it a little bit, put some of my own Dr. Sam Fester sprinkles on it. But like, I do like, it's a great starting point. So I think we need to learn from what we've done in the past with Wikipedia, instead of just blocking it. You can't use that. Let's teach our students how we can be using it as a tool, as a starting point, but then going back and looking to see what it's come up with, editing it, making it our own. So I think there's a lot that we need to discuss when new technology is around, not only our pedagogy, how's it going to affect our students, how's it going to affect their learning, but also if it's a tool our students can use, how can they use it purposefully in the classroom?
I love that comparison to Wikipedia, actually. I hadn't thought of it in that way.
It's right. Yet. I mean, that yeah. makes sense in my head. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that, you know, thinking back to like the tail end of, for my own experience, the tail end of being in university and it being like, hey, Wikipedia is a thing. And like, holy crap, look, there's all this information on the internet. Then it being like, wait, you can't use this. It's not. Yeah. It's questionable, right? So that idea of information literacy just is so important.
And going back to if it's not usable or it can be edited, same with ChatGPT. I mean, it has right on whenever you use it, this information could be biased, this information could be inaccurate. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you ask GPT a question, it doesn't know, it might make something up. So it's being aware of the tools that you're using and using it thoughtfully, I guess, in the classroom would be a good way to describe that. But yeah, let's not repeat the Wikipedia thing.
And kind of pulling a thread from one of the things you said, particularly with like ChatGPT and the ways we can use it, makes me think a little bit like, how do we really think about technology for accessibility? So when I think of something like ChatGPT, and one of the things Katie will tell you I talk about all the time is like, when we're teaching, how do we think about just asking one question and only asking students to do one task? And when we're teaching things like editing or evaluating and letting ChatGPT create something that we can edit or evaluate, as opposed to, you know, putting the pressure on evaluating peer work or having to create the work by yourself, I wonder if we could talk a little bit about like, what are the ways we should be thinking about accessibility and technology and how it could help students be more connected and more engaged with the learning?
Ooh, that's such a deep question. I like that, Chris. Nice thread pull there. Isn't that what podcasts are all about? Mm-hmm. You know, pulling threads and seeing where we go. So I think with using educational technology, maybe since COVID has really shined a light on this of accessibility and access to technology, access to content for all students in the classroom. So some things that come to my mind is designing with accessibility in mind first, instead of an afterthought, like, oh yeah, I should probably put alt text on that in my PowerPoint. Now there are things that can pick that up for you. So like in PowerPoint, for example, you can do an accessibility checker and it'll go through and it'll check your presentation, what you need to improve upon, but not just what, but why. Why should you do that? Why is that important? So for example, I had a presentation that had like a tan kind of font and it flagged it as not an accessible color because a screen reader would have a hard time like seeing that. So I'm like, oh, thank you very much. I will change that. Now I don't have any students using screen readers in my class, but it's designing with all in mind. All right, I want to do that checker. I want to see how it goes. Also, a lot of the tools that we have access to today have things like our features like immersive reader built right in, which is fantastic because my students can be using the same equipment that as everybody else, and they have immersive reader built in so they can access that content, that curriculum in a way that best fits their needs. So they can have it read aloud. They can increase that font size. They can change up that contrast. They can use the translate feature for my multilingual learners. So I love that accessibility is becoming forefront when it comes to designing with technology and access. But also when we think about accessibility, you had shared about a little bit about differentiation there, how students show what they know in different ways. And I think that is fantastic because I love doing that with my students. I don't like getting 20 of the same thing over and over again. It's like reading a recipe, or you know? So I like when they differentiate and they try out new things. Maybe instead of doing a write-up, they make a video or do a podcast or create a stop motion something. I don't know what they're going to do, but it's a lot of fun for me as a teacher to evaluate. As long as they hit these points in there, we're golden. We're good to go. But I love that my students can work through their strengths and their interests, their talents, what they value, and show what they know in that way. And we all have those. We can all build upon our strengths and show what we know in a different way. So some of us really like to write. Me, not so much. I can talk about stuff, which is great. And yeah, so I like to differentiate in that way too. And I think that's something that we need to consider when we're designing our lessons, when we're designing our assessments, to make sure everything's fluid, we're hitting our standards, our outcomes, how we're teaching, and then how we're assessing and differentiating that assessment for our students.
So one of the things I'm really taking away from your answer is the need for adaptability and flexibility and forward thinking. Like, I heard you talk a lot about solving for problems that may not exist, but really thinking about where the technology could help and also hinder student learning so that we're planning for that. Is that hard for students to grasp? Like, do they practice it often with you? Like, how do they become proficient in that? Because I feel like that's a whole separate skill from just being a good teacher, right? Like, there's teaching practices, there's things we do to kind of pull students in. And then this is a whole nother layer. So how do you make that accessible for your students with all these different, you know, backgrounds and approaches to technology?
That's a good question. So I think that comes with practice. I think often when we're student teacher and doing field work or in our first year of teaching, we just kind of fall back to the way that we were taught or strategies that we learned in college. And I think after that first year or so, we can start really looking at our practice, take one thing and tweak it for the next year. You know, take one little thing and just keep tweaking it until we'll never become a master teacher, because no one ever is the total expert, can never, you know, do anything else better because we're always learning. But I think that comes with time and with knowing your students. So we do talk about the power of relationships, building those relationships with students from day one and continuing it throughout your time with your students. And by getting to know your students, you can pull their strengths into the classroom. You can pull that into that differentiation. So I think, you know, we could talk about it and we give ideas on how to do it, but practicing could be something that you would do more in your first year of teaching, because you have your own class, you're really building those relationships, and, you know, trying it out for one activity. Oh, that went well. Let's try it out for another one. So don't just go and blow up all your lesson plans and start from scratch. Take something that you've already done and tweak it a little bit and just keep finessing it until you go. I mean, I'm still finessing my course 9 years in. I'm like, oh, let's try this out. Let's do this. Let's do that. So I think that's just the way of a teacher. We're always trying to do better for our students.
That growth mindset. I love it. Yeah. I'm going to ask one more, Katie. You're going to hate me, but now I'm like on this path. So when I think about that, and I also think about, like, we have a teacher shortage. We're losing teachers in those first couple years. Do you think as a whole, we are giving new teachers enough support to manage that? Or are they feeling pressures of parent expectation, student expectation, building level expectation to be proficient? Like, do you think there's enough space out there for them to have this growth period and this growth mindset to push them forward?
I think there needs to be, if there isn't already. I mean, whatever you're saying about pressure from families, it reminds me of this meme that I saw where it said in 1990, and it had a picture of parents, a student, and a teacher, and the parents are like reprimanding the student. How could you have these grades? So it talks about family dynamics and teacher dynamics there. So I think there does need to be a space for growth and learning for our new teachers, and having the openness with the administration to say, here are some areas that I'm struggling with. Can you help support me in this area? And I think whenever you go in, let's go back to like an interview process. When you're interviewing, when you're being interviewed for a school, you also want to interview the school as well to make sure that's
such a great
fit for you. Yeah, because if you get the question, what are your strengths and areas of need, or what are your strengths and weaknesses, something like that, you can share, I shared one of my weaknesses with you. I don't know what a good one would be right now off the top of my head, but how will your district support me in fostering growth in this area? So being open with your administration, telling, hey, I'm struggling with this area, can you help me? Having a quality mentor teacher who is there to bounce ideas off of. Maybe having a support system with your cohort that graduated with you or your cohort of new teachers, having that support system, not just to complain, but also congratulate each other on those small wins that you have throughout the year. Because you're going to have days where your face hurts from smiling so much. You're going to have days where you're crying in the car and everything in between. And that's totally normal for no matter what year you teach, but definitely for that first year of teaching. So I would say be gracious with yourself. Give yourself patience, give yourself grace. You're still learning and that's okay. It's an okay place to be. I don't know if I answered your question, but yeah, I gave some.
No, I think that's perfect. And I really like the reminder that, you know, building relationships is for all learners, teachers in the classroom, students and teachers, and making sure that we take the time to nurture those professional relationships as well. I think that's a really important thing to remind ourselves of.
Yeah.
Right. How would you better than I did? Thank you, Chris. Yeah.
She's so good at this. How would you flip that advice for, for the older, maybe older is the wrong word, but more veteran teachers? Yes. Who are like, I'm feeling burned out. I'm feeling like I might want to leave the classroom. But what advice would you have for them in terms of, supporting those new teachers that are coming in and building that network for them?
Right. So as soon as you had mentioned veteran educators, having these feelings of burnout, there's an amazing educator that I follow on Instagram. Her name is Amber Harper, I think is her last name. She runs the Burned In Teacher podcast, and she shares strategies to help you find what level of burnout you are in and how to help overcome them. So she has amazing strategies, workshops. She has a podcast as well that has been really helpful for educators who are feeling that stress, feeling that burnout. Because I think sometimes in education, we can kind of be our own worst enemy in a way that maybe we're blasting out online, oh, I'm so frustrated with XYZ or whatever it might be. And then that might have a negative effect, how you're feeling in the classroom. You never know who's going to read that post. So being mindful of how we're portraying our field, how we're portraying our education, our livelihood is really important. Because I think sometimes we can get trapped in kind of like a negative spiral, but there are lots of good things that happen with education. I tell my future teachers, thank you for choosing teaching. It truly is the best profession on the planet. I truly believe that. I know there's lots of challenges out there. Pay, respect, to name a few, right, with teaching. But I still think it's the best profession on the planet. I wouldn't want to do anything else. So, yeah, I would definitely recommend finding resources like the Burned In Teacher podcast, another great resource for seeing what type of burnout or the burnout cycle. Kevin Lichtman also has a book out about being a burned out teacher and how to recognize patterns of burnout so you're not burning out others around you. how to overcome.
Totally. I read a blog post just this morning, actually, about this idea of retraining our brains and our nervous systems around looking at the good things. Because if I say like, everything stinks and my kids are going to be bad today and, this is really difficult and I don't have the support I need, those are the things you're going to see, right? Because those are the things your brain's like, yep, that's what I'm expecting to see. Confirmation bias. There it is. There's Johnny messing around in the corner again. My admin isn't supporting me again. We're wired to see those things. And then our brains actually ignore all the great stuff that happened that day or, the things that were supportive, the things that were positive. Switch your brain and you'll save yourself from burnout. No, clearly that's not true. Those ways to retrain ourselves a little bit to make sure that we're seeing the good things, because there is always so much good.
I've noticed some teachers writing three things that, you know, they're grateful for in their classroom. Just keeping that love of learning, their love of their students alive. Another teacher friend of mine, Katie Mucci, she always has little post-it notes on her students' desk telling them what she appreciates about them. And yeah, I know, right? I mean, if you guys could see her face, it's a great way to build those relationships and also keep those positive vibes going.
Because they're contagious, right? I mean, to Katie's point and to your point with, you know, the acts like putting the post-it notes on the desk, like when you have that kindness coming from you, when you have that mindset, then others are going to pick up on it. Like, not universally, because our brains don't work that way, and the worlds that our students come from, we have zero control over, but it is, it's so important to come in with that mindset and with that energy to help our kids.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome. Dr. Sim, this has been a wonderful conversation. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our audience today?
Thanks so much for having me, Katie and Chris. I really appreciate your time.
Awesome. Well, and speaking of recognizing the positive, we'll end then with one final question and ask you what the best part of your day has been so far.
Honestly, I just came back. Well, I have two good things. I saw some student teachers this morning and they rocked it. It was so fun to see them in their element of teaching. And I also got to have lunch with two of my new students this semester. It was a lot of fun getting to know them. So those are my two positives and I love it.
Yay. Yay, those are such great positives. Yeah. Lots of really valuable stuff mentioned here today. We will link everything down in the podcast, down in the podcast notes. so close. As well as where you can find Dr. Sam, her own website, her incredible books. Definitely encourage you to check that out, learn more about her and what she does and all of the amazing resources that she has for new teachers and for teachers of any experience bracket. So Dr. Sam, thank you again so much for being here with us. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the EdShift podcast. We appreciate so much that you're here. Leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it. Connect with us on social. We always want to hear from you, and we'll see you in the next episode.